Hello, how are you?
Not bad, how are you?
I'm good. Long time.
Yes, it was, I can't remember when it was. It was
18th when, October.
Yes.
The last Skype message I had with you.
Yeah. So how's it been going with the new baby?
Yeah, good. What I always said before was if you've had dogs, I'm sure it's not much different. And I'm glad to say that I've been proven right. It's very similar.
That's true. Yeah. They do have a tendency if you leave them nappyless to crap everywhere. So,
yep. Well, just like things like you can't go out anywhere for too long.
Yeah.
Yes. You might get woken up in the middle of the night with it crying. You might wake up in the morning to piss and shit everywhere.
Yeah.
You have to sort of make your plans based around that rather than anything else. So it's similar. I feel like I've been hemmed in the last few years because of my dogs, and this is very similar.
it's probably good training.
But magical and wonderful.
How many dogs have you got?
Two.
Okay. Yeah, I mean the interesting thing with kids is obviously as the numbers grow, the amount of time it takes you to leave the house increases.
Yeah.
Exponentially. So it's like, you know, one child or a baby, you've got to make sure you've got the nappy bags and all that sort of stuff if you're going out for the day or whatever. And then it's like, you know, as you get more kids involved, there's coats, there's things they want to bring, there's getting the right shoes on. It's like, it just reminds me of that. There's a brilliant Michael McIntyre sketch where he talks about
You
know, what it's leaving the house when you've got no kids is like, let's leave the house and we're done. And leaving the house with children that you're walking around screaming, shoes, coat, and all this sort of stuff. And then, then they get in the car, you lock up, and it's like, I forgot this. Great. And then you go back in again.
I said to you on text, I don't know how you do it with five of them, because just one of them and my schedule was completely screwed for weeks. It's just like, I can't do anything. I can't work. I'm trying to work. And then my wife would come in and say, can you just hold this baby for a second? And then half an hour later, I'm like, where the fuck has she gone? Where is she? Well,
my wife's got very, very good at organizing everything now. So she's got it down. You know, she's had five chances to do it. So everything is organized now. Obviously, when you had the first one, everything was new. But as we've got to three, four, and five, then, you know, the nappies, she uses like these rewashable nappy things that my mum made, which are quite cool. But obviously, you have to deal with it. When it's a newborn, usually we have them in disposables or whatever. But once they get to the point where they can be sort of potty trained, then you just put that on just for safety and at night. But yeah, she did that really. She potty trained all the kids really early, starting from Poppy, who was the second one, because she didn't want to be dealing with two, because there was 2 years difference between them. So she didn't want to have to deal with two lots of nappies. So it sort of pushed her to sort of get Leo potty trained quite quickly. And so when Poppy came along, she wasn't having to deal with nappies for both of them, which is quite cool. So, and that's always surprised people, you know, that our kids have been sort of potty trained quite quickly. But that's why, really. But yeah, she's got it all organized. So, you know, when she goes out, she knows what to grab, what to do. She's got everything sorted. So if it was down to me, it would be a bit more chaotic.
I think your exact reply to me when I said that was something along the lines of, well, I just lock myself in my office and unless something's on fire, I don't come out.
Yeah,
I like when you're on a public recording, it's all, oh, my wife, she's so wonderful. She's so great.
Yeah, I'll get the knock on the door and she'll come in with and hand me Zeb or hand me a child and say, could you just look after them for a minute? I need to pop out or whatever. So, and then the danger there is I can't do anything in the office. I usually take them back in the house because I've got all my sort of what I'll call decorations, but other people call toys around, including Lego stuff. And, you know, I'll be doing something, turn around.
I'm
like, no, don't drop that. Don't drop that, you know. So, yeah, it's easier for me to just take them inside and sit and play
Arthur
or whatever, watch TV or something.
Arthur is completely obsessed with my Apple Watch. The biggest problem I've had is that when I hold him, like I normally have him facing away from me so he can look at toys or books or whatever he's looking at. And he just goes to my Apple Watch and just starts smacking it. And he'll ring people. He'll do walkie-talkie. He activated the emergency thing once.
Oh, cool.
And so my advice to anyone in a similar situation is that don't forget that since Series 2, there is a waterproof mode, which is for swimming. But what it does is it disables the screen. That's all it does. It doesn't do anything special.
Really?
Yeah, so if you swipe up from the bottom and then scroll to the little teardrop thing above the walkie-talkie icon and press that then locks the screen so that touching it doesn't do anything. It's designed so that when you're swimming, the water doesn't keep interfering with the touchscreen. And then the only way to unlock it is to scroll the what do they call it, the crown. You scroll that all the way around, and then it does its beeping to eject water out of the speaker, which is still awesome and still works. But it's a great way of locking your watch to children. Because originally I just did the screen off thing, but obviously that still works. They can still tap the screen and wake it up. And he just snaps his hand all over it, and he's just like, yeah, let's tick off those to-dos, let's start a workout, start a timer.
What was that? What was that feature that you could scribble little things to each other? You know, the...
Oh, the digital touch. Yeah.
Yeah, that digital touch we've barely, you know, pretty much never used.
That's just the only time messages now. Yeah,
the only time it gets used now is the same situation as that, when the babies have been grabbing hold of my wife's hand. And all of a sudden, wherever I am, I'll suddenly get this ding. She sent me a digital touch. It's weird. And then I look at it, and it's just like it's just a scribble of stuff. And then about five more will come in, and it's like, oh, my God.
I used to get that, but it wasn't from a child. It was from my wife trying to do the heartbeat. And she could never quite get both fingers on a 38mm watch properly. And so constantly, you'd get about 5 minutes of these weird single taps, triple taps, like, the hell is she sending?
Yeah.
Is this some Morse code she's sending me? And then eventually you get like 2 seconds of heartbeat. It's like, okay.
She's trying a bit like me trying to send you messages last night and the autocorrect was not learning. I don't know how autocorrect works, but you know, I say NP for no problem so many times, and it's not the first thing. So the first thing that comes up is no. So you'd sent me something about, can we change the time to 11:30? And I went,
I thought you just turned very passive aggressive. Yeah, that's fine. No.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'm like, asterisk NP, and it goes no again. It's, oh my God, why can't, this is 2019 and this thing still doesn't learn how I type things and stuff. It just drives me mad. Have you tried, speaking of the watch there, have you tried the ECG thing? I think I tried it once.
I have, yeah. It's very, very good. In fact, actually, I showed it to someone the other day because our house got randomly selected to be part of the National Health Survey, where they give you a tenner and then they come and ask you some health questions. And I thought, that'd be fine. And then it turned into two visits of like 2 hours each. And I was like, this was not worth a tenner.
Yeah, 10 quid.
But they had a nurse come and she like took blood and she did like,
oh God,
measurements and all kinds of stuff. And I was talking about the Apple Watch, and then I showed her the ECG, and she was like, "What the hell?" And I was like, "She's like, how does it work?" And I was like, "You just put your finger there," and she couldn't believe it, and because she was asking me, "Oh, what's the next big thing gonna be?" And I was like, "Augmented reality glasses." It's always my stock answer, but I was like, "The watch is pretty cool, though." I've used it. I have a normal heart apparently, so that's good.
Yeah, same with me, which is always good to know.
My wife,
it's had a lot of flack.
Yeah, I don't understand why. It's really good. It's really good.
It's just the typical thing of people saying, oh, it's not going to replace a full ECG. It's like, well, of course it's not, because, you know, full ECGs have got about 30 pads they put on you or whatever. But but it's sort of it's indicative. Yeah, it's an indicator, isn't it? It's if it picks up something, then it's basically saying, okay, you probably need to go and see a doctor. So it's just
get a proper ECG.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're not going to walk into a doctor's surgery and they're going to go, right, let's do an ECG, and he gets his Apple Watch out, you know.
We talk about this a lot, and I always feel bad, because what I'm going to say is incredibly, I forget the word, hypocritical, which is, I can't fucking stand people that complain about everything. And I realise I'm complaining about the people complaining.
Yes, yes.
But it's just like, how many, like, they've built a fucking ECG into a watch on your wrist.
Yeah.
Just be happy with it. Just be amazed that we live in a world where you can go, oh, I'm feeling a bit peaky today. Is my heart all right?
Yeah.
Oh, I should go to the hospital. It's amazing.
Or you can, you know, walk out of the house without your phone and still get a phone call or make a phone call on your watch, you know, Dick Tracy style, or do a stream podcast while you're doing a run, or play music on a watch, you know, that runs apps, and hopefully soon can run some of those apps independently. Well, some can anyway, but independently of the phone. So it's, you know, it's like a full on computer on your wrist, and it can do all this health stuff. It's just insane.
In my opinion, the Apple Watch is one of the most impressive pieces of tech I've ever seen. Like, the phone is just at a point where it's like, eh, we talk about it all the time. I think we're going to talk about it later when we get to WWDC, and it's like, oh, what's the new big thing that's coming? Oh, a dark mode, yay! oh, we've come leaps and bounds in this phone hardware and software, jeez. But actually, the watch is where everything interesting is happening. It's the same as I said last year, so I don't give a shit about iOS. I just want to see what watchOS is doing, because that's where the interesting stuff happens.
Yeah, and we'll I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute. But there's other stuff involved. There's catch up to talk about as well, because obviously the last time we spoke, the iPad Pros were had they been announced? I think it was the announcement, and we'd spoken before the announcement, but then we didn't have any follow up, did we? Or did we comment on the announcement? I can't remember.
I'm gonna check our website now and find out.
I don't think.
No, we didn't. I mean, literally, the last episode we did, I've got dictation charging the iPhone XS, Bloomberg, bagel emoji, Twitter, transferring cellular and Apple Watch photos and the iPhone XR. So it's a varied bag.
So since then, we've had the iPad Pro 11-inch and 12.9.
I think we talked about rumors about the iPad back in August.
Yes, we did.
But yeah, we didn't ever talk about them.
Did you get one?
I got the 11-inch iPad Pro to replace my original 12.9-inch, which very was... Nice. I liked it, but it was a bit too big. And obviously the new one's way better, because it's the iPhone X of iPads. It's, you know, a fully gesture-driven interface, Face ID. Once you've had Face ID, you don't go back to touch.
It's very weird,
You just don't.
Very weird, very weird.
It's a perfect upgrade. I mean, I don't use iPads very often. Actually, since we've had the baby, we do use it every day because we do a crossword in bed before we go to sleep, because apparently we're middle-aged now. But apart from that, I don't tend to use it much. I use it a bit for reading, and I have a few of my own personal apps that I've written, not like App Store ones, just ones for like my collections of stuff that I prefer doing on the iPad than the iPhone. But apart from that, I don't really use it that much, but it's a way better iPad than anything else that they've made. And if you were in the market for an iPad, of course you'd go for that one. Why would you go for the old? Like, they've had a new iPad since then. It's just called the new iPad. Is it called iPad? I don't know what it's called.
They've got iPad, which is basically the 9.7-inch.
Yeah.
The sort of full size budget iPad. Then you've got the iPad Air, which
is more
powerful.
One.
And the iPad Air is now the 10 inches. I think it's the 10-inch because they're using the. Yeah, they're using the sort of tooling, I guess, that they did the original small iPad Pro with. So that's now moved to 10.5, and that has a faster processor and better features. And I think it has some screen improvements and things that the standard one doesn't. I don't think the standard one does that tinting thing, whatever they call it, and wide color gamut and things like that. Hmm. And then you've got the iPad Mini. The new Mini 5.
Yeah, that came back. Probably.
Yeah. And that's like a miniature version of the Air almost. I was very indulgent. So I got, because I had the 10.5 and the 12.9. So I replaced those with the 11 and 12.9. So I got two and then passed down the others to my wife. And I don't think that'll happen again because it's ridiculously expensive and it's just crazy. Because what I typically used to do is have an iPad Pro on my desk to watch like Sky News or to watch Netflix or to do the odd little bit that I need to do on an iPad. And then I'd have the other one in my bag. And so at one point I had the 12.9, the new 12.9 sitting on my desk with a pencil on top and really just collecting dust when I wasn't using it, which just is crazy. And I was using the 11. And then what I've done is then switch those around to try and determine if I did upgrade again, you know, what I'll go for. So the current one I'm carrying around is the 12.9 in my bag, which is nice size. I mean, the 11 is nice. The 11 is really nice. And maybe the 11 is what I go for because I can type perfectly well on both of them. There's no issues with the screen size or being able to type. The keyboard's really, I really like the smart keyboard cover.
Do you go for a smart keyboard on both?
Yes. And I don't like the fact that you can't fold it into, you know, the whatever they call it, the media mode, you know, with the keyboard, because the way the keyboard's been redesigned, you can't do that. But it's not the end of the world because it's just a little keyboard sticking in front. So it's not like a deal breaker. The weird mode is if you fold it all back and have the keyboard on the back, which I've seen lots of people again complaining about. Oh, this is a bit like the Apple mouse and plugging the thing in the bottom. And it's like, it's like the thing is, what none of these it's like everyone that writes these complaints and writes these articles seems to have either glued the smart cover to their iPad with super glue or don't realize that it is actually removable. Because they're like, oh, you know, I can't stand the fact that when I pick it up in tablet mode, I have to have the keys on the back. No, you don't. You just literally unpeel it from the magnetic back and hold it like a tablet. It's A, lighter, thinner, nicer, more Star Trek-y, and you don't have the keyboard on the back. It's not a big deal to do that, you know? But no, they're forced into having the keyboard on the back, and that's made it very, you know. But this is, you know, this was a solution to solve the, you can't use the old one on your lap because the way the smart cover worked.
And it's like, well,
and this has solved that problem. Again, it's there's other people complain. I saw other people complaining that they've had to put stickers on the back of their iPad Pro on the, you know, because the back is now covered. They put stickers on the back so they know which side is correct, so they don't open it and it falls out onto the floor. You know, they don't seem to understand that there's a camera on the back and it's really easy to see what's the back and what's the front. You know, I've never made that mistake with any of mine. It's literally complaining for the sake of it. It drives me crazy.
That's weird.
Generally,
How's the 12.9 compared to the old 12.9? Because obviously this one, the bezels, or bezels, as you like to say, are much smaller.
Yeah. They are, yeah. And it's
because I really was torn between the 11 and 12.9. I debated it for so long. Which one did I want? Did I want to go for the massive one again? Or would I be happy with the smaller one? And I think I'm happy, but I'm curious as to how much better it is. Like, I found the original 12.9 very hard to use with one hand because it was a bit too heavy, a bit too big.
Yeah, I've just got the 12.9 out of the bag. I know this is a very stupid thing to do on a podcast because no one can see anything, but I'm going to just put it...
Describe the scene.
Yeah, describe a scene. I've got the 11 on my desk, which is in... I've got a different cover for it, so it can go into that media mode, you know, the sort of stand mode. So that's just sitting there under my monitor, and I'm just putting the other one on top. And if you actually compare the two, it's sort of like... It sort of feels like about an inch and a bit wider and an inch and a bit taller. Hmm. It's not like offensive, but I know what you mean. The old 12.9 was very big, and when you held it in your hand, it was huge,
very big.
Heavy. Yeah, and it was
bigger than my laptop. I mean,
exactly.
It's crazy.
Exactly. This thing, if you look at a 13-inch MacBook, it's about the same depth and it's about an inch narrower. So, you know, it feels much nicer in your hand. It feels lighter in your hand. It doesn't feel as cumbersome at all because of the way they've done it. So it's a really, it's tricky because it's like, I like the size of the 11-inch. And if I'm going out for the day, I had to go to London a couple of weeks ago, I'll take my bag with my laptop, and I took the 11-inch. I didn't take that because I didn't see the point of taking two huge devices. So I'd take the 11-inch with me. So it could be that I end up only sticking with the 11-inch in the future just because it is so convenient and so small. But the screen is so nice. But the 12.9 is, that's why I'm using that at the moment. I'm sort of switching between them to try and get the feel for it because it is so nice and the screen is so big and, you know, the keyboard's nice and comfortable. I could still type on the 11-inch, but it just feels nicer. But I just can't see myself traveling or going around with a 12.9-inch iPad and a MacBook Pro.
No, God, no.
Yeah.
Well, I used to have the the proper Apple keyboard with the 12.9-inch. This time I just went for the Folio case, which I think is new because it's like it sticks to the back and the front rather than just being the clip-on front like the iPad 2. Smart cases were, which is a shame because it's way more expensive, but at least it balances out the camera bump, which I know it's a lot. The camera bump has been a thing for so long, but I do hate it so much because it just makes the device wobble on the table.
Yes.
It's almost like they're saying you need a case. And it's the same with the iPhones. I always buy a case now. And the only reason I buy the case is to stop the camera wobble.
Yeah.
Because I find it very irritating. So I didn't go for the keyboard this time because I don't really... I don't ever type on my iPad. I know they try and make this big push for, oh, it's a consumption device and a creation device now, and all these rumors that they're going to add a mouse mode as an accessibility thing in iOS 13. And some people are like, oh, I really want to use it as my main computer all the time. I think that's fucking stupid. Just use a Mac. But for me, it's just a consumption device, and it does it very well. And it's a definite improvement on what was there before, if only just for the Face ID and the lack of bezels around the side. But also, I mean, the hardware in it's ridiculous as well.
You've come
to a point now where it's just, it's being hampered by the software more than anything else. I still find the multitasking incredibly complicated, like how you add side views and how some things can, some things can't, how it remembers the position of windows and things. It is a bit of a mess. And to be honest, I mean, I think a bit of a mess is probably a good moniker for the iPad in general, because the iPad line is incredibly confusing. If someone said, oh, what iPad should I buy? It's like, well, there's lots of them. Exactly, I don't know anymore. It's almost a mixture of bits. Who knows?
Yeah. It's almost like if someone said to me, you know, what iPad should I buy? And I'd say, okay, what phone have you got? I've got an iPhone 8 or an iPhone 7. It's like, right, so they've got Touch ID. And they haven't upgraded to a 10, which could be a cost reason or something else. So I'd say I'd probably, you know, recommend iPad Air or something like that that's still got the Touch ID. But if they've got an iPhone 10 or 10S, it's very jarring, like you said, to go, like I got the new Mini. It's very weird going back to touch. Yeah, very, very weird. But again, like you're saying, I think there's sort of two schools with the iPad. There's like the people that I guess are like us. We've got our Macs and we do our sort of proper stuff on that. And then we use our iPads for different things. Like you use it mainly to consume. I do use it to consume, but I've also, you know, written articles or written things or done Trello boards or whatever, you know, nothing huge, but I've done my accounting and things like that on it, where it's something non-programming basically that I need to do. I can do it on the iPad, or, you know, updating a photo or whatever. That's all quite cool. But then you'll get this school of people who, no, they want to force the iPad into being a proper computer. So it's like, I'm going to plug it into a monitor and then have a Bluetooth keyboard, you know, the normal Mac keyboard. I'm going to use one of those, what do they call it, Magic Keyboard 2. I'm going to have one of those. I'm going to plug it in so it mirrors the screen to my big monitor. And then I'm going to use a combination of the keyboard and touching the screen. It's like, what are you doing? You know, just use a Mac. You're trying to, or people that buy these bridge keyboards or whatever to turn their iPad into a, you know, a MacBook effectively. And it's like, you're changing your behavior, and you're changing what software you use, and you're changing what apps you use, and you're changing how you do things, because you're trying to make the best of this situation that you can make much easier if you just use a MacBook. Do you know what I mean?
Favorite thing every time we get an iOS update or new iPad hardware is the myriad of articles of, I tried using just an iPad for a week. It's like, oh, why? Why?
Yeah. And why here's what I found. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's exactly. Difficult.
So you'll get people like that, or you'll get people that will use shortcuts apps or anything, or lots of third-party things to try and get around those idiosyncrasies or deficiencies. And it's like you're creating this like workflow of stuff where you're, you know, creating something over here and exporting it to this and then doing it to this and doing it to that, when you could just do it all on a Mac. I mean, the one thing I did do on I haven't recorded a podcast on an iPad, but I did do. I did edit one, which was quite cool. So I used the Pencil, and I used, I can't remember the name of the software now, Ferrite. So I loaded in the file, the MP4 or MP3, and I used the Pencil and Ferrite to edit it. And then I actually published the file up using Textastic. So I actually edited the XML file, uploaded the file with that. So I actually edited and published the podcast from an iPad, which was fine. It worked. It was a little bit clunky. You know, you had to sort of you had to save it to iCloud. And because obviously there's no, you can't, it would be nice if you could link the apps together in some way to say, I want to connect Textastic and Ferrite in terms of file import export, so I can just seamlessly move that file around. But otherwise it was perfectly doable. The one thing,
was it slower than doing it on a Mac?
I would say the editing was faster, only because Ferrite with Pencil support is really slick, and you can do stuff really, really fast. You know, you can nullify sound and chop bits out quite quickly.
Wow!
It's the bit from there to publishing was clunky.
Yeah,
definitely clunky. Yeah, because you sort of had to go into Textastic and
I suppose you could just airdrop the file to your Mac and do it that way.
Exactly. So that. Yeah. But yeah, I'm the sort of person that I'm not trying to make my iPad into a full computer, and I don't really want my MacBook to become a touch screen thing that's all dirty and horrible.
Oh, God, no.
And any compromises there. So I'll just use them for what I need to use them for. You know, and if I need to do something where I need a Mac, I'll get the Mac out. And if I don't need it that evening, I'll leave it in the office and I'll use my iPad in the sitting room or whatever I need to do. But the interesting thing for me was thinking, like, I wonder whether that, because they are ridiculous machines in terms of the speed, is just phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, I know you don't like or don't play Fortnite or whatever, but when Fortnite came out for iOS, it was always quite clunky, but it sort of worked. But it was terrible to play because it had no controller support or anything. On the iPad Pros, it was insane. It could do 60 frames a second. It is almost as good as an Xbox in terms of the quality. You know, it's better than a Switch. It's super smooth. And with controller support, it's just ridiculous. I mean, I haven't played anything on the Xbox now for months. I've been just playing stuff on iPads. And apparently there's other games like Black Ops and this Apex Legends is going to come out on mobile. So that's interesting. But what's interesting about the machine in terms of the speed and everything and what happened with iOS 12 is that I wonder whether, and this has probably been talked about by other people, but I wonder whether this hardware or iOS 12 should have been more stuff that was in iOS 13, and this was the hardware that was going to take advantage of it. So, yeah. You know, some of these, if we forget all the speed improvements and all that stuff that they did, I would think that this hardware was the hardware they were readying for all the cool features in iOS 12, which was going to be stuff that we're now going to see in 13, like better multitasking and better iPad support and UI changes and desktop views in Safari by default and all this stuff, because it sounds like this was being pitched as like a mini computer, you know, USB-C and all that stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year. You know, are they going to do an iPad update? Because again, like the phones, what's next for it? You know, you've already got a machine that's faster than a MacBook. It's got a good camera. I think it's the same camera as the 10.
Yeah.
It's got a great screen. You can make the bezel smaller and the you know, and improve that sort of stuff. Maybe put two cameras in it so it can do landscape face ID better or whatever. But that just sounds like fluff, you know. It just sounds like adding something for the sake of it.
It seems like this hardware could last a few years.
Yeah, easily. And I'm wondering whether that's going to happen, whether they've made such an advancement with the hardware for this that obviously they want to sell iPads. But possibly, could this be like the MacBook, where it goes, or the MacBook Pro, where it sort of goes into a 2-year cycle?
You should do, really, because it's obscene just how quick it is. And I don't think people update them every year. Like, I don't buy an iPad every year. I buy maybe one every 3 years. And even then, I don't use it enough to justify it. But exactly. I would never buy one each year.
Yeah, with what these cost, I mean, this will probably be... Yeah, I can't see any reason why I would buy a new one this year. You know, it would have to be... phenomenal, the upgrade, and I just don't see that happening, because this thing is light years ahead of anything else. It's just very, really pleased with it. Very nice machine.
Good. Well, I guess you're going to get a lot of people buying these iPads and using them with the keyboards and that, because the MacBooks are so terrible with their keyboards. I mean, that's a real disaster, right?
There's obviously, people are obviously experiencing problems with these keyboards. What gets me about it is, you know, air cans that you could buy to clean keyboards have existed for donkey's years. You know, keyboards have always had issues. They've always had dust and crap that gets in them. And if you're someone who sits there eating a baguette over your keyboard, you're going to get stuff in it. You know, any keyboard needs good cleaning now and again. I can appreciate that the butterfly keyboard mechanism has, you know, smaller key travel, smaller gap. There is the possibility that this stuff can happen. Yeah. But I've not experienced anything on since the, 2016? So 2016 MacBook Pro, 2017, and 2018. So I'm now on the 2018, and I've had no issues with keyboards.
No, I'm the same. I've got lots of them. I think it's like a hit job where people hated the keyboard from the MacBook 12-inch when that first came out, four years ago? And they didn't like the fact they had the small travel because it didn't feel as nice, which is true. It didn't. It just made the device thinner. And a lot of people don't like the thinning of devices and think it's stupid. And I think that it has manifested into we don't like this thin keyboard. We prefer the deeper travel one. So any single time anything goes wrong with it, it's a big thing. Whereas previously, if you had a sticky key on your keyboard...
That's it, yeah.
I've definitely had problems with old keyboards where they would stick, but I've never had one... more recently, and so I think maybe there's a problem. Maybe people are just being finicky because they don't like the keyboard. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the both. I think there's definitely a problem. I think the issue with all this is that whenever there is a problem like this, you'll get this sort of small amount of people that will be very vocal on Twitter. And so it appears to be a much bigger problem. And I'm sure there is a problem. I'm sure there is a design problem with it. And there's something that's happening. And I'm sure Apple know about it, obviously. And I'm sure they're on it. But obviously, they're the people that have got the stats. And what's interesting is they're not necessarily going to come out and publicly say anything. And it probably would, if this is the case, what I'm about to say, then that must be the most frustrating thing. Because I'm wondering whether it's the case that actually the percentage of people actually experiencing problems is very, very, very small. Mm-hmm. And it's just that some of the ones that are having the problem, especially a certain person, are very vocal on Twitter about it. But obviously, to come forward and say, look, we've got a problem, but only this number of people are experiencing it, is you're admitting you've got the problem, which means, lawsuit central. So it must be incredibly frustrating to have to sort of keep quiet about it and just try and deal with it. But yeah, I've no doubt there is an issue. I just find it a little bit ridiculous that people are going on about it, mainly because two reasons. One, if your device is within warranty, you can get stuff fixed. Yes, you might be without your device for a few days, but Apple tend to be very, very quick. And if you've got AppleCare, then you can get a complete replacement, and you can get emergency replacements where they'll send you a new device before you send yours off. This is all built into AppleCare Plus. Now,
even without AppleCare, they would still do it. I've had problems before where they just replace it, and it's fine.
Now, for expensive devices and for definitely my MacBook, I always get AppleCare Plus. Yes, it's insurance. Yes, I haven't had to use it once for my MacBooks, which means people can argue you've just wasted £600 or whatever on recent upgrades and stuff. But I do it for two reasons. One, I think it helps my resale value, because if I do get rid of it after a year or two, it's still got an extension of warranty on it. Mm-hmm. And two, it's my business machine. It's what I make money with. So if it dies on me, I'm in trouble. So I want to be able to go to Basingstoke, go to the Apple store, and if I have to, get a complete replacement and restore from Time Machine, and I'm back up and running within 24 hours. That's why I do it. And so for me, it's a worthwhile insurance policy to pay. I don't understand people who've got business machines, who have got keyboard issues, who are having to use an external keyboard because their keyboard's broken, and they're not taking advantage of things like AppleCare Plus or just warranties to get it sorted, even if it's without, even if you don't have a machine for a couple of days.
Or
it
just seems crazy. If you really don't like the product and you think there's a big problem, why keep buying them? Like, some people have got it repaired and it still has a problem. It's like, well, just return it, get your money. Like, if there's a problem and it doesn't work, get your money back, buy a different laptop. Oh, but these are the best ones. Oh, well, isn't that shit then? Use an external keyboard. Oh, I don't want to use an external keyboard. And on it goes. It's just the sense of entitlement that gets me. Specifically, Casey Johnston, who seems a massive twat. I don't know if I should be picking fights on podcasts, but I'm going to say it. With his article, and the title is honestly, and I saw this title and I just had to put it in the notes as just like, what a twat. That's my only contribution to this show is that, and the fact that I hate the phrase dub dub. That's my contribution to this episode. But the title is, Apple owes everyone an apology, and it should start with me, specifically. It's like, fucking hell. My God.
Well, did you see the Wall Street Journal one where they wrote it so that it had all the letters missing, like A and E or whatever?
Hilarious.
And you had a switch to turn it back on, which is hilarious. But the only people that are benefited at the moment are all these blog posts and podcasts that are selling advertising and complaining all the time about this stuff. The other thing that really frustrates me is how it degenerates into this thing about how Apple have basically screwed up, how this is going to last 10 years and it's going to damage them damage them for the next 10 years in terms of their reputation and everything. Hmm. And then the suggestions start coming in on, okay, well, what would you do to fix it? And then we start getting, well, I'd have a thicker MacBook with a bloody mechanical keyboard. That'll be the next thing. huge, great 80s style keyboard.
An Apple Type 2 in it, please.
Yeah. We want a bigger laptop with a big screen. We want, we don't care if the battery lasts 3 hours. We want it to be super powerful because we can just plug it in. We need a mechanical keyboard. Yeah, we want all USB-A ports. We want 10 USB-A ports. We want FireWire. It's like, let's just go backwards. And you end up with these people going, oh, this would be my perfect next generation MacBook Pro. And it's like, that's not next generation. That's like three generations ago. Yes, there's obviously an issue. Yes, it needs to be revised. And I'm sure they're going to do that in whatever comes next. But like you say, you know, if you don't like it, buy something else. Yeah. And if you do have to work on a Mac, if you're an iOS developer and you've got no choice, then you need to buy a different machine, or you need to do things differently, if that's what's important to you, or use an external keyboard. So,
Apple are pretty good at apologizing when something goes wrong, or not even apologizing, that's probably the wrong way, but they're pretty good at getting ahead of an issue if there is an issue. Like, if you think of the antenna issue ages ago, where they did a little press conference, they're like, this is stupid, but we'll give everyone a free case anyway because that'll help, and they redesigned the antennas. Like, they got ahead of it. I'm trying to think of more recent examples. I mean, we're going to talk about AirPower shortly, but that's...
What about the upgrade issue that happened that apparently was going to damage their reputation for 10 years as well, that everyone's forgotten about? The battery performance, the throttle.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's another good example.
They just come out and go, this is why, this is it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
As they've said nothing about this, either you have to give them the benefit of the doubt that this issue is not as widespread as people would like you to believe, or that it is massively widespread and they're just not saying anything and they're hoping that it'll all go away, which doesn't seem like them to me, at least.
I think it's the former
of the doubt. Like, I mean, if you look at the recent Samsung Galaxy Fold that is a clear example of something being wrong for everyone. Like, every single person who reviewed it said the same thing. That is a problem. That has not happened with MacBook keyboards. It's very, very different.
What I love, just switching to this, what I love about this is that, you know, when Apple came out with the iPhone X with the notch, you know, Samsung made that video with the guy with the haircut and his whole family have got like the notch haircuts and everything, and absolutely took the piss out of them, completely ripped into them, and have done for virtually anything that's ever happened with Apple. Yeah. Then go and come up with devices that are similar and have notches or, you know, whatever they are. Yeah. Then come up with the Fold, which doesn't even work perfectly.
Let's not even get to that. Like, just on the face of it, when it's folded, it's the thickness of like even thicker than a Motorola clam phone, and it has a screen on the front that doesn't fill the screen and is off center.
Yeah, it's, I don't understand that.
Oh, it's such a horrible device.
It is literally the most bizarre. It looks like something that was done in a hack week. You know,
and then when opened, it's got a notch, but it's got like a side notch. It's got rather than a unibrow, it's like it's got one eyebrow missing. It's a lovely
big crease down the middle. But it's just the fact that they didn't even make it past the review stage and had some that failed with customers. They failed with the reviewers. reviewers who you want to promote your product and say how great it is and how amazing it is, it failed for pretty much every single one of them on day one. And they show these videos of this rig, you know, folding and unfolding, folding and unfolding. And it failed for several reasons. There was dust ingress and all kinds of things. But one of the things that happened was that the screen had what looked like, and it does, if you look at it, look like a screen protector. It's indented, you know, it's not fully covering it. For some people, that air quote screen protector was slightly peeled off. So they did the natural thing that people do. They pulled it off and immediately it broke the screen. So they had to put a thing in the retail packaging that the reviewers didn't get saying, there looks like there's a screen protector on the screen. It is integral to the screen working properly. Please do not remove it. They actually had to put that on the screen. The whole device is one of those things where, like we've talked about, the progression of phones, you know, once the cameras get perfect, well, not perfect, but, you know, as good as perfect, what's going to make you want to upgrade? What's the next big thing to do to phones? And that's a typical example of someone literally going, foldable phone. And then someone's like, yeah, foldable phone, let's do it. And no one's asking for it. No one needs it. It's a device that, you know, is being invented to create a new category just for the sake of it. He's gone again, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's a stupid device.
Did you just go to the doorbell again?
I might have done. Was it not that seamless?
No, I suddenly realised that there's something going on. So anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I was just basically saying it's a device that I don't understand.
I thought that would be the perfect response to whatever you just said, and Paul was just me. Yes, it's a terrible device.
Yes, true.
My stock answer.
Yeah, but it was just, I mean, the whole thing, I don't understand it. I mean, there are other ones that have been done that look better in terms of their approach. So the screen's on the back and the front and they fold a different way or whatever. So it looks a bit better.
I've never had a desire to want a phone turned into a tablet. Now, I know that you don't build for what consumers want. You build for what you can build and you think is going to be better. So I could just chill over it. And then when I get one, I'd be like, oh, wow, this is really amazing. But for me, it just doesn't appeal to me. Like, I don't want to fold up my tablet and then have a double thick phone. It's not something I think I would ever need or use. Partly because, as I say, I don't really use my tablet. And I don't think that this is going to make a whole load of people really want to use tablets. And I think that most people, when they use tablets, probably use them at home. It's more of a home device than, or a device that you might travel with, like on a long journey, like on a plane or something. But I don't think you're suddenly going to get an army of commuters who want much bigger phones. Like, we're talking much bigger, just so that they can have a bit of convenience of having a bigger screen when they're on the train. It just seems weird to me when we're at a time when a lot of people want smaller phones again, when they're thinking, you know, this 6 inches is too big, to then make it the same size but 2-3 times as thick, probably even thicker actually. Like, how much thicker is the Galaxy Fold to like an iPhone XS?
Like, I think it's twice. It looks like it's twice the thickness, basically.
Well, it looks like it's twice, but I think it's probably more because the screen.
And it has a weird gap. It has a gap because it has to have that gap for the hinge. So it's almost like a wedge shape. So it's actually a really awkward thing. I mean, it definitely feels like it feels like, you know, when you see articles that say, oh, we found on eBay or managed to get hold of an early iPhone prototype, and it's like a logic board with a screen plugged into it and a sort of weird, you know, keypad, and it's like all the components that would never actually get in the phone because they're all huge, and it's running on this little screen, and it's like, you know, almost like a dev kit type thing. That's what this feels like. It feels like something that's been thrown together as a prototype, and it's something that it almost feels like what should have come out is this amazingly thin thing that's just an incredible piece of technology, and then in a couple of years they'll go, oh, we found one of the early prototypes, and then they show you that thing. That's what it looks like. It's just a ridiculous device that, I mean, I don't have a need right now for something that turns into a tablet. If my phone could, if the screen could somehow get bigger without it being twice the thickness or, you know, huge and cumbersome and break and have a horrible plastic screen, if there was some amazing tech that could do that, I would find that quite cool. You know, the fact that I can just sort of suddenly make the screen bigger. Like you see in the sort of movies of the future where they sort of drag like a, it's almost like a roll-up screen. You've seen those sort of films where they sort of drag it out and make the screen bigger. I think Westworld did something like that. That would be really cool.
That's going to work. I imagine that will work in future by you won't actually have a device. You will have just a piece of paper or something. And your AR glasses will just project it onto it to make it look like a device. Yeah. That's how you fold up a phone or a thing and turn it into a tablet, is you have your glasses on that do it for you. That seems like the future to me, rather than this weird try and mush these things together.
Or even just holding the phone in front of you normally, and with the glasses on, you've got the normal display of the phone, but around the phone you now have additional options. You know, you've got different additional buttons and things you can do. Like multitasking wise, you might see your apps going off to the left and the right, and you can literally just, you know, tap on one in the middle of the air. That would be really cool.
And if you want to play like a video when you're reading a news article, it can actually appear above the phone in space. You don't need it to be on the display.
Exactly. That would be really, really cool, especially if the glasses are really, you know, really slick and not like those ridiculous Google ones, not like a huge headset. You know, that's the way to do it, definitely, because the tech is just not there. I mean, every single one of these folding phones just looks, you know, terrible in some way, and especially the screen has to be plastic, obviously, and you know there's nothing you can do about that crease. You get this horrible crease, and it just for a £2,000 device or $2,000 device, wow.
To me, it feels crazy. Like augmented reality glasses will be here quicker than a decent folding tablet phone will be.
Yes,
that's my opinion, but I guess we'll see. But terrible device. I'm guessing it's cancelled. I don't think they're coming back from this.
You don't think
they're going to actually ship it?
It's a,
I'd
well,
be very surprised if it actually ships anytime soon, like in the next 6 months.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, they were what, a week? They were a few weeks away from actually shipping it, so surely they must have boxed up products everywhere
being distributed. Away. Just 1 week.
Yeah, so they, like, so you're going to have to pull all that stuff back. You're going to have to get all of these devices open and sort of refurbished or whatever needs to be done to them. You've got to go back to the drawing board anyway with the screen, and then once you've worked out, you fixed it, then test it. You know, you've got to test it so bloody carefully to make sure it's actually going to work this time. Then you've got to update all these units. I think you're right. I think it could easily be 6 months to a year, or could just not happen. Very much like
they've
AirPower.
Already got pre-order money as well. Like, people have literally being refunded.
Yeah,
because
exactly
they're not allowed to hold on to the money for X amount of time in America. I think they've got until
the
end of this month, and then they'll be automatically cancelled if they haven't said otherwise.
I'm sure somewhere, someone in Samsung, or it's already happened, has already taken the piss out of Apple for cancelling AirPower, you know.
Well, I was going to say, this is a nice segue into AirPower, which has gone a different way. Rather than distributing it to reviewers and it not work, they just cancelled it. I went, you know what? We can't do it. I mean, it's bad that it got to the point that they announced it. It's bad that there are diagrams for it in the iPhone XS packaging and with the new AirPods. That is not good either, but it's better than having sold it and it not work.
Well, so, not just that, having sold it and it burst into flames or something.
Oh,
you
well,
don't want,
exactly.
You know, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with all this stuff. You know, they'll get ridiculed and criticized for cancelling it after promising it for 2 years or whatever. But in an alternate reality where they actually managed to release it and then loads of people's houses are burning down because their air pads burst into flames,
yeah.
You know, that they'd be finished. And so it was totally... If that's the reason that they couldn't create something that worked consistently and was potentially dangerous, then obviously totally the right thing to do. But it is a shame. I still maintain I didn't understand how it was going to fit with the watch, especially with bracelet watches, because that was a terrible. That would be a ridiculous thing where you've got the only products that you can use on it is a watch that has a traditional strap, and all of their expensive bracelet straps they sell would
They don't sell them anymore.
Yeah, the loop would be okay, but it's the other ones, isn't it?
They
I think they're still on the website
anymore.
Somewhere. They just don't push them.
Are they only for the older? Well, I say only for the older watches. They would fit with the new one, but it's I think it's literally just the last bit of stock that they have.
Okay.
For the what was the 38 and 42? I'm just having a look now. If it's available.
When I first heard that they weren't in the store anymore, I thought that was a clear indication that AirPower was going to happen because. They were basically they were going to set themselves up to not have those bracelet straps. So it wouldn't be a problem, except for people with older devices.
Oh, no, I'm wrong. Sorry, they do still sell them. Maybe they've come back on since AirPower got cancelled.
Yeah. we can put those back on again. It is a shame because it was a great idea. But I guess the fundamental thing with AirPower was, again, it was trying to, you know, they went with the I think you pronounce it, the Qi standard.
Yeah.
Which was the correct thing to do because it would have pissed off everyone if they'd gone with a wireless standard that was proprietary, which I know they'd done for the watch, but anyway. They went with the Qi standard, which means you've just suddenly got all these pads anyway that exist that people can use. And then they were almost like, well, now we want to get in on the pads, but what's going to make ours different? Oh, we need to make it so it can charge everything at once. And the crazy thing is since they announced that, there's been loads of other products that are coming out. Like there's ones that fold out and, you know, fold. It's like a little folding puzzle type thing. You fold out the flaps on each side and now it can charge three things. So they're not exactly the same as AirPower in the way they're working, but they won't charge an Apple Watch unless there's a dedicated Apple Watch port on it or whatever, plug or whatever it is, attachment. But there are devices that are trying to do this sort of pad approach and can do multiple things. And so I guess it was almost like it was taking so long to do. They obviously had issues with it, but other people were coming out with all these other things. It was almost like, should we even bother, you know?
Yeah, but I don't really like wireless charging, if I'm honest. It doesn't work for me that well. I just don't see the point of it so much. Like, it takes up more space on my desk than having a thing to plug in. Yeah, again, it's more convenient just to drop it on the table and have it charge at a trickly slow pace rather than just plug it in. But I find, like, on my desk, I just have a cable coming out of my Mac Pro because it's easier for me for development and testing and charging. And by my bedside table, I still have a Belkin Valet thing where you just have to clip it in. And sometimes it's a pain in the ass to slot it exactly in the right place. But I don't, it, like, it takes up so much little space than having something flat. Now, there are ones that you can have vertically, like Belkin have one that's a wireless charging one, but it's like 120 quid, and it's like, I don't need to pay that just to have it charge wirelessly if it's taking up the same footprint on my bedside table. But I don't get it, the flat ones. I'm like, it's horrible.
I don't mind. I've got one on my desk and on my bedside table, and I sort of just, I don't mind using that because it's just easy for me to put it down and works pretty much most of the time. I have more trouble with my damn watch, where the little disc charger with the thing that hinges up sometimes hasn't made
sure. Oh, yeah.
And I'll wake up in the morning and realize I haven't charged it, which is a pain in the ass. But I'll tend to plug in most of the time if I need, you know, if I'm low, I'll plug in, because this is just going to take all day otherwise to charge on wireless, which, you know. But if you're doing it overnight or whatever, it doesn't really bother me that much. So I've got a few pads around the house, but most of the time I plug in as well.
With the watch, I've not actually been charging mine as much lately, because I've been using a app called, let me find it, Sleep Watch, for sleep tracking. So I wanted to try and see how much I was sleeping, because I wasn't sleeping enough.
All right.
And so what I do now is that when I shower, I put my watch on the charger, and then usually what usually happens in the evening is that I'll get into bed with my wife as we're putting Arthur to bed, and we'll sit and do our crossword and whatnot, and I'll take my watch off and charge it then for like half an hour, 45 minutes, and then I put it back on again, like, because I might get up or I'll go to sleep, and then it does it. But the fact that it charges so quickly, and that in the day, even when doing workouts and stuff, the Series 4 battery just doesn't go down that much.
Yeah, it's good.
I find that I never, ever run out of battery. Even when I'm wearing the Apple Watch, probably like 22 and a half, 23 hours of the day, it's still always full. Like right now, I've been wearing it since about 7:30 last night, and I'm at 71% battery. So
yeah, it is good. I mean, mine's 83 at the moment. I do charge it overnight because I've got this Aura ring. I bought one of these Aura rings for sleep tracking.
I thought that you had. I was going to ask you about that because I only found out about them last week because Dave Verwer of iOS Dev Weekly had said he'd got one. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then I saw that it did all the other fitness tracking as well that the Apple Watch does. And I was like, do I need this just for sleep tracking? And then I looked at the price and went, yeah, I don't.
it is ridiculously cool. I mean, what I don't get is how they, you know, I know it's tiny and it does a few things, but it's obviously doing very simple things in terms of the battery requirements. But it is insane that it lasts like a week.
I'm guessing an Apple Watch or an iPhone motion chip, you know, those little M1 chips they made. It's just an M1 chip in a ring, but it's still very cool.
So it can do heart rate, it can do step counting, it can do sleep tracking, or it uses those combinations plus motion, I guess, accelerometer stuff to work out, you know, whether you're moving and things, and it can use the heart rate and stuff to work out if you're in deep sleep, and I guess movement as well. So you get this like analysis in the morning, but it's very, very cool, and you do forget about it. But what's really nice about it is, again, that's got an amazing charge capability. So if you do get to the point where it says, and it will tell you, you know, make sure you charge it before you go to bed tonight, you just put it on this little dongle thing that it goes on. It's like a little mold that just sort of sits on top, and it starts flashing, and you can probably, you know, I can do a bit of exercise for half an hour, just like a TRX thing or something, so I'm not doing step counting, and it'll be charged after that, you know, it'll be fully charged after half an hour. So it's really, really, really impressive, and all the step counting and everything goes into the health app. The only annoying thing it does is it reminds me of the old stand thing that the watch does, is that I might have gone out for a run or something, or a walk the dog or something, and I've come back and I've sat down, and then about 10 minutes or half an hour later, it'll go, time to stretch your legs a bit. It's like, piss off.
Oh, I had that happen to me yesterday. I just got off the treadmill, and a thing popped up going, bing. Yep, you've got your exercise goal. That's all great. You're fine. And then literally 2 seconds later, bing. Go on, close your move ring. Come on. Yeah, a brisk 12-minute walk should do it. It's like, fuck off. My heart rate's 168. Let me rest, damn it.
Well, I bought one of these because I was doing some personal training. I had this guy that was coming over, but he's trying to set up his own gym, and we're taking a break from it. So I'm doing my own sort of exercise sessions where I use a TRX machine, you know, the sort of things that you dangle from your door, and do a load of exercise with that. And then I needed to do some running because running is obviously really the best way for me to get fitter. So, but I'm terrible running. You know, I just I'll give in much too easily. Unless someone's running with me or I'm being pushed, I will just, you know, I'll walk this bit for a bit. Do you know what I mean? My stamina is pretty crap like that. So I bought one of these things. It's called the Vi Personal Trainer, and it's basically a Bluetooth headset with all this extra gubbins in it. And it looks like a weird sort of like a bendy necklace thing that sort of goes around your neck. So it's got these two sort of booms each side, and then it's got little wires that go up to the headphones, and the headphones sort of go really snug into your ears because they've got sensors in them that can do heart rate and things. And then you pair it up with an app, the Vi Trainer, and you say what you want to do. You know, what's your target? Do you want to get fitter? Do you want to lose weight? Do you want to do this? Do you want to be running for longer or whatever? And then it will work out a program. And then it's got this voice, synthesized voice. Well, it's not synthesized. It's recorded, that will basically talk you through your exercise. So it will say, right, let's do a 30-minute run. So it gives you all this guidance. So it will play some music in the background. It's got its own like music libraries of things to motivate you. And then, long story short, it basically learns from how you run, and then it can adapt your workouts based on that. So if you're struggling or whatever, and you can rate the workouts. But it's quite cool because it will say, right, let's get started with a light jog. We're going to do this for 3 minutes, and then you just jog for 3 minutes, and then it'll say, right, now we're going to go into an easy run. But my point of telling you this is that this does a similar thing. So you're running, and I'm like running for 27 minutes straight, which doesn't sound like a lot at all, but for me it is. And all of a sudden she'll go, you know, your step rate is 65 steps per minute or something. You need to up your step rate. Run faster. And you're like, and especially at the end of the run when I'm really sweating and starting to get knackered, I'm telling her to piss off. You know, she's like, run a little bit faster. No, bugger off. I am not running any faster. But it is cool. I mean, it's very, it has helped. And I was able to go out yesterday actually without it and do a 30-minute run without it. My only criticisms of it are that it's not compatible with podcasts, which I like listening. The reason I like listening to podcasts when I run or walk is I find them completely distracting.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like repetitive music. So I can get lost in the conversation that's going on, and I completely forget that I've just run for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work very well with that, because what it will do is it will, if you've got the podcast player in the background, the Vi thing will kick in and interrupt it and sometimes won't restart it again. And it's a real pain in the ass. I know. And then you sort of have to fumble on your watch.
Especially as it's so easy to get that to work properly. Like, it does it for you. All you have to do is set the AV audio session to, I think it's called like Duck Audio or something, and it does it automatically.
It's very, very frustrating. And I've complained to them, but they've said, you need to raise the support ticket and all this stuff. But that's the reason yesterday I went out and just listened to a podcast instead. But it is very cool. I mean, all this fitness stuff, I do like the fact that all this data is just sort of coming together, and you can just go in the health app and you've got all this information that's in there about your heart and everything else. Mm. It does make you, it just makes you forget it all. You know, it's all happening. It's very clever.
Yeah. I started doing the Couch to 5K thing again. Don't know if you've seen that before, where it's like,
I've heard of it.
Yeah. Week one, it's like you walk for a minute. No, you run for a minute, and then you walk for a minute and a half, and then you run for a minute.
Yeah. Okay.
And then it slowly, the end result is that after like 9 weeks, you then run solidly for 30 minutes. And I did it before, and it was very, very good. And I've started doing it again recently because I've not been doing any exercise. And I do it on the treadmill in my garage. And I've got an Apple TV in there. And I thought, God, it'd be so much better if I had just an Apple TV app for this, because the phone ones, I have to have the phone screen on so I can see like the countdowns for each phase. They're a little bit too complex sometimes to try and work out on my own, because it's like, do this for a minute, now do that for a minute and a half, now do that for 3 minutes, now do that for 3 minutes. And it's like, it's a bit too much effort to work it out myself on my clock, like how long it's going to take. and a lot of them have got like audio and stuff as well, which I don't need this time, where it's got like people encouraging you on. And so I thought, there surely must just be a basic Apple TV app that shows like a countdown and shows the groupings. And there wasn't. There's just nothing at all. And so I built one in like 40 minutes, just built this basic big timer, which then has like a little bit at the bottom, which fills in to show where you are and just tells you whether you should be running or walking. And I think I'll probably at some point make it pretty and stick it on the App Store. And I've decided I'm going to call it Chaise Longue to 5K because I think it should be for a more discerning person. But that's worked really well because then I can just run and I can look at it. Because having it on the phone was always a pain because, especially with the iPhone X series now, you don't really want to have the screen on all the time with it
No.
being an OLED on a
So,
fixed thing. So it's not ideal.
I haven't done any Apple TV stuff at all. So, how did you get that onto the Apple TV? Do you have to plug the Apple TV in, or do you deploy
Well,
it over the air, or?
yeah, it's interesting. Originally, the Apple TVs all had a micro USB port on, which
Yeah.
was super weird because they don't use micro USB anywhere. But it had
Yeah.
this weird little micro USB port, and you could just plug it in, and then it worked in Xcode. The Apple TV 4K doesn't have anything on it at all. But actually, no, they switched it to USB-C at some point, and then it
Okay.
disappeared completely. So now, if you open up the Apple TV and I think you go like settings, remote apps and devices, which is where you'd see like Bluetooth stuff you've added. If you're on
Yeah.
that screen, when you have the devices tab opened in Xcode on the same network, it recognizes it and then you compare it and then it does wireless like it does if you
Oh,
connect
that's
an iPhone or
cool.
whatever, and then you just deploy wirelessly. Funny enough, I built a Apple TV app for a big company that I can't talk about at the moment. Over the last 4 or 5 months, that's all finished, but I don't think it's going to be released for another month or two. But I will talk about it later when it comes out. But I had to go into their offices to get it to work, and they're on a corporate network that had like loads of ports blocked, and
Oh,
so
God.
it just was not showing it to the laptop at all. And it took so much effort to like get it to finally work. I think eventually we connected it to a personal hotspot. And I found it that way so I could add it,
Oh,
and
my
then it
God.
was on the system. So when it went onto the normal network, you could right click it and say connect directly via IP address, and then it all worked. But that was a real hassle. Like most things with Apple, in 99% of the situation, it works perfectly. But for the edge case where you need something more advanced, it's ridiculously hard to get it to work.
Especially corporates and that whole concept of when you start work. I mean, I did a pharmaceutical app, an iPad pharmaceutical app for a toothpaste brand, I think 2 years ago now, and it's never been released, unfortunately. I did all the work for it and everything, and then there was one aspect of it where they needed to collect information. So it's just like a contact us form, and all you had to do was it was for dentists to basically use to show patients and to go through this sort of tutorials and videos and things, and then just to promote this product, and then it's like filling your details. So all they needed to do was collect details. So I said, okay, that's fine. We can use like a cloud service, a few dollars a month for hosting, and I can do that in about 10 minutes and just hook it all up, and the data's there. And they're like, no, we need it to go into this back end system. So it has to go into this back end system that needs to go via this corporate network. So all of a sudden, I'm now firing up VPN software on my Mac, connecting to this VPN, which, by the way, as soon as I connected to it, killed my normal internet, so I couldn't like go to pretty much anything else. It was just ridiculous. It just blocked me from going to certain sites, and I'm like, this is just nuts. Then I'm having to remote control a Windows machine, Windows server, to use SQL Server, and it's like, you have got to be kidding me. And trying to deploy a .NET app that I was having to write because I had to write my own backend API, trying to write this backend A in .NET so that it works with JSON and everything is terrible. Well, the implementation at the time was just awful. Instead of like a Node backend, which is what I wanted to do. So having to use that to then connect to SQL Server via these two, because obviously there have to be two separate servers. You have the web server and the SQL Server, both behind these VPNs, was just horrific. And it got to the point where I'm like, I just can't do this. I just literally cannot do this. It's like there's somebody basically, it's like someone's just covering my eyes as I'm trying to code constantly. I've just got constant, or I've got a small child on my lap and I'm trying to code. It's just a constant block of anything that I try and do, there's something else. And so I just said, look, I just can't do this. And then they tried to get someone else in to do that part, and I don't know what happened with it after that. It's just a complete disaster. Back and forth with IT departments who are sort of saying, oh, you need to
Oh,
install
God.
this and do this, and take 3 days to come back to you when you're in the zone to sort of get that piece of work done right there and then, and you can't do it. It's just infuriates me. So yeah, but that's cool. I didn't realize you could do wireless Apple TV deployments. Pretty neat.
That's pretty good. The Apple TV is fun to work with. I mean, it's very different to iOS and others in a lot of ways. In the way that watchOS restricts you very, very much to what you can do, the TV does as well, but it also has this weird complication with the Focus engine where you have to, you're not touching anything, you're indirectly accessing it, and trying to do anything complex is a pain, as I've discovered. And you can make these special, like, invisible focus guides that, like, when a scroll goes over it, you can then redirect the focus elsewhere, and it's complex, but it's pretty fun. So yeah, I've had fun working with Apple TV stuff recently. What else have we got to talk about? I think, speaking about TV, we should probably do Apple TV Plus and that stuff that was announced at that really weird presentation.
Yeah, full of storytellers telling stories and storytellers.
Yeah, I didn't watch it.
I watched it. It was fairly dull. I mean, it was a bizarre thing because they didn't really show any footage. It was just people coming on stage. And the funniest bit was how people came on stage was like, yeah, it was like some weird theatrical magic trick or something. It's just suddenly the light would appear and there's another star there. And it's like, what the hell where are these people coming from?
You know, apparently they had Apple employees with infrared goggles who would lead them out
place. That's hysterical.
So when the lights are out, there's like literally two people with night vision goggles pushing them to the right place and then running away.
That's hysterical.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the event was cool, and in terms of what they were announcing, the frustration with all these things is when these things come out. You know, it was like it was obviously
especially
one of these.
Here.
It was obviously one of these. We're going to have to announce this, sooner than expected because it's all going to come out anyway soon. You know, and everyone's going to know everything. So you know, TV Plus sounds cool. Apple Arcade sounds cool, but weird. People are going on about it's like an amazing concept and everything. I'm finding it weird in that
it's a weird concept because every other gaming platform has it.
Yeah,
like
it's just
Xbox has Game Pass, PlayStation has its own thing. Even the Switch has a stupid mode where you can get free NES games. It's not a new thing to have a subscription that gives you access to games so long as you have the subscription, the so-called Netflix of gaming. I guess where they've done it differently is that they're investing in games that will be exclusive to it, which is kind of interesting. I'm intrigued by that, and it's kind of funny how they've made it, there'll be no in-app purchases, no microtransactions or anything like that. It's just you pay for the game and you get it, you get it for free in this instance. That's cool.
I'm just wondering how that works with the, is it the fact that they've gone to developers and said, we want you to be part of Apple Arcade. We want you to have some games in Apple Arcade. So here's some money to commission you to write a game. And then they go off and write, they come up with the concept of the game, pitch it to Apple. Apple say, yep, let's do it. And then do they pay them some subsidized amount of money to help develop it, but they'd also get a cut of the subscriptions? Or is it, no, you just get a cut of the subscriptions? Don't know how all that works.
I think it varies. For these ones that are already confirmed, I think Apple have given them the money to make the game. And I don't think they get any money after that because they've been paid to make the game.
Interesting.
But quite a lot of money, I think, by the sounds of it. They had like a $100 million fund for it. So they've thrown some serious cash. Then there are people, like now, as a developer, you can go to the developer portal and you can request to join Apple Arcade.
Either with
an existing game, which you can have be part of the arcade service, and then I think you get like a kickback, but I don't know how much it is because they don't say publicly. You have to like go to a negotiation, I guess, and they're very picky about who they'll accept. So I think things like Alto's Adventure are going to be on it, but obviously that's available on Android and other places as well, but you'll be able to get it for free with your arcade pass, I think.
I wonder how the IP and everything works, because I mean, you know, if Alto comes in, so is there some lock-in period they have to be in there, or can they come out of Apple Arcade? If they do they have to pay anything back to Apple?
I think there's no detail on how any of that works. I think if they've given you money and they've funded the game, then there's obviously a contract in place whereby it's exclusive to them forever. If you've voluntarily gone into the arcade program and you're just giving your game away for free, pretty much in it, I think you can probably withdraw it whenever you want. I think it's probably fine, but they don't announce any of that stuff. But the upshot is that we'll get, you know, you pay a subscription, you're going to get access to a load of games that exist already, and you're going to get access to games that are exclusive to that arcade platform.
And what do you think it's going to cost?
I would say a fiver. I'd be surprised if they go for a 10.
Fiver a month?
Yeah. I'd be surprised if they put it at 10. Because
That'd be interesting.
Is it worth as much as an Apple Music subscription? No.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Maybe 8. Let's say £8.
What about TV Plus?
Oh, TV Plus will be expensive.
You think?
Yeah, I think you've got will start at 10. Because
you've got the base.
Though.
You've got the base service, haven't you? And then you can either. I'm not sure if you'll get all these channels for free, but then there's these TV channels that TV companies can do, or cable providers can do, where you can sort of subscribe to that channel. So it could be one of these crazy Sky things where you could end up paying like 50 odd quid a month.
Absolutely,
to all these different channels.
Yeah,
and one of the theories there is because it's going to work like that, it's possible that the Apple TV Plus service itself might be just free as long as you've got an Apple product. Which is interesting because obviously you've got these, which we haven't covered, but it's only a little bit of interesting news, which is the TVs that are coming out now that are going to be supporting playing Apple content. So I wonder if you subscribe through those, do you pay? But if you have an Apple product, if you've gone and bought an iPhone 10 or an Apple TV or whatever, you get the service for free. It's interesting. And maybe this is one of those things where they've got the infrastructure and getting all that in place, but they're not sure about the pricing yet, and they've put it out there to see what the response is.
I could see it being free if you own an Apple TV because all of the content is stuff that they've made. You could make the argument for, well, Apple Music isn't free, and you bought an Apple device, but they have to pay royalties every time you listen to anything. So if you're a prolific listener, then you could be costing them a lot of money. I mean, they've got a lot of money. Yeah, there is an argument to say maybe it should be free, but I can see why it's not, because it'd be a loss maker, a heavy loss maker. With the Apple TV, that's not necessarily the case, because as long as people are using their devices, they get access to it. So maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I don't know. But maybe, services is what they're trying to increase the revenue of, so I can also see why they'd want to charge for it.
Exactly. But
I don't know. I've no idea.
And I wonder whether there would be a bundle of something they do, because that was the other theory around iCloud. You know, the complaint about iCloud backup storage is that you have some sort of subscription that basically combines a load of things and includes some iCloud storage.
So the bundling gets so difficult, because what everyone would really want, right, is you pay, I don't know, $40 a month, and you get a big slash of iCloud space, you get News Plus, you get Arcade, you get TV Plus, and you get Apple Music for all your family. Done.
Yeah, done.
Like, that'd be great. Yeah. But obviously, that's going to be a lot cheaper than if you'd subscribe to each one individually. And so it's weird. It's also weird how they put such an emphasis on it's all family. Like, if you buy the Arcade subscription, your whole family gets it. If you buy the News Plus subscription, your whole family gets it. Apple Music, you have to pay extra for that. You have to pay £15 instead of £10. So I'm curious as to whether that is going to fold back down so that the family will just be the default, or whether that's being charged extra because of the fact that that's the only one that costs them money, whereas the others are all their own stuff, in a sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's very confusing. Who knows? Who knows when it's going to come out? I mean, Arcade is clearly going to come out in September alongside iOS 13. I mean, they couldn't have made that more obvious.
Exactly.
I'll be very surprised if it doesn't. Well, I guess it could come with like 13.1 or something stupid, but I'm pretty sure that's all going to be 13. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some new stuff in iOS 13 specifically for game developers, probably a new version of Metal. Maybe Game Center is going to be not shite. that would be useful.
Because it sounds like... Yeah. Did they say TV Plus was coming later this year? But there is a new TV app that's in the current betas, and it sounds like those betas could be ready around WWDC time. So we'd get the new TV app, but obviously not TV Plus yet, because that's coming out later. So that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, the new TV app still works with everything else. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
with the app I was working on for the Apple TV, it was for a large TV company that is going to appear in the Apple TV app. So I knew about the new Apple TV app about 4 months
ago. Right.
Because
okay.
I saw the private documentation that's like, oh, there's you need all of these new artwork sizes. No reason. And it's like, are you redesigning that app by any chance?
Yeah. That was like, remember the Xcode that came out with the resizable simulator? It's like, what?
Yes.
You know, your apps need to work in this resizable simulator. Okay, something is happening. I think we're getting devices with different screen sizes. Interesting.
I mean, it's all like Arcade, I'm pretty sure, is going to air. It's going to be everywhere in the world, pretty much. Apple TV Plus, the same, because why wouldn't it be? I mean, it's their own content. News Plus is obviously US only and will be UK. I think they said by the end of the year or next year. Yeah. Soon, so fine. The one I really wanted, and the one we're never going to get, but the one that I really wanted was the Apple Card. How nice was that?
Yeah, that was... I totally forgot about that. That was very slick. I love the fact you could just...
Beautiful.
You could just create a card, you know, virtually in minutes, but then also they'll send you a titanium one. It's just absolutely nuts, but... I think you're right.
We're with no details on it whatsoever.
Yeah. And, you know, it was clever the way they were doing things like, you know, if you're buying Apple products on it, you're getting cash back.
So nice.
You know, and the cash just goes straight into your sort of
account every sort of day.
iMessage, Apple Pay, whatever they call, which we still don't have yet.
Yeah, but, that's the other thing. I still want that as well. Why don't we have that yet?
I'm guessing because they're proxying off someone else that there's all kinds of legalities and stuff that has to be done. It's like, you know, Revolut and people like that that have to go and become proper banks, and there's probably regulatory stuff that they have to deal with. So yeah, it could happen.
I was hoping the cash thing could happen.
I'd definitely like to be able to send money in iMessages between people. I think that would be slick. But the card, you know, okay, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, but it would be nice.
I don't think it'll ever happen, but I'd love it if it did.
Shame.
Yeah,
well, that leads us on to WWDC.
I hate that so much. I hate it with a burning passion. I hate that Americans turn W into dub. It just drives me mad.
Shortening something even shorter for the sake of it.
I hated it when George W. Bush was in power and people would call him W. That really irritated me. And when people refer to WWDC as either, or they, when they just call it dub-dub, they don't call it WWDC, they just call it dub-dub. And I'm like, shut up. This is why I don't go to conferences. This is why I don't socialize with other iOS developers, because they drive me fucking mad. I don't want to be in a room with a load of people who go dub-dub and complain about fucking keyboards. I can't be dealing with it.
Or give you a URL and go, yeah, it's dub-dub-dub dot, oh my God.
Oh, come First on. Thing, yeah. People don't so, use so, yeah. that anymore. You use naked domains. But it's a good joke. I'll take it.
Yeah, you just type in World Wide Web dot. It's like, oh my God, please. So the big thing is that we're going to be having a load of iOS apps on the Mac.
Yay!
And I'm pretty sure one of those will be the Twitter app, and they'll have them on stage, because that will be a bit of a coup for them.
Does anyone care? I don't know.
I think it's interesting what they're trying to do. It's clear that. There's a lot more iOS developers than there are Mac developers.
Not Marzipan. I mean, I'm excited about Marzipan. I just meant about a Twitter app on Mac. I couldn't give a shit.
I'm actually still using the Twitter app, but via the via a PWA, and then using Chrome's feature to turn it into an app, which just wraps it basically. So it's still got loads of issues, but it's as close to the normal Twitter app. I just couldn't use Tweetbot. It just drove me mad that. Well, mainly because of all the Twitter API changes that I couldn't do all the things that I used to be able to do.
And I like you don't see polls, feature. You don't see group DMs and loads of other stuff. Yeah, it is a pain.
But yeah, it should be interesting to see what they do in Marzipan. I know there's talk of a whole load of new apps, a bit like that. You know, obviously it came out last, they've been doing it for a year, you know, with their own stuff. And there's been a lot of criticism and complaints about things. I mean, aesthetically, it doesn't bother me if I go into the home app and set a timer or set something and it comes up with a little rolling date thing. That doesn't really drive me mad. You know what I mean? It's like
the home app has so many bigger problems than that.
Yeah, it just doesn't. It doesn't really. I'm not offended by the fact that these apps look iPad-y. It just a lot of people are, and I don't get why they're so upset about it.
I get that they want it to look more like the native interface, and that's fine. But the question I always pose to people when they complain about Marzipan is, would you rather have not have that app on the Mac at all, or yeah. have it on the Mac, but it runs a bit like an iPad app in that it looks a bit like it's in a simulator? Yeah. Most of the time, you're going to want the second. Like, I'd rather at least have it on the Mac than not have it at all. I guess yeah. the problem is, whilst it lowers the bar for entry so that people can come into this platform and actually make apps for it more easily, there will be some apps that are currently made natively and nicely that will probably dumb down a bit because it's much yeah. easier and cheaper. And that's sad, but it's not the end of the world. I mean, just because these apps use the standard iOS components doesn't mean you have to. I mean, I make apps that don't use that date picker anyway because a lot of people hate it because you can't theme it in any sense at all. You can't even change yeah. the color of the damn thing. So it's like, it doesn't have to look that way. It's just because the developer's chosen to use the stock component. So I think it'll be fine. I don't understand what the fuss is about, but people no. like to whinge, don't they? So.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said about, you know, what would you rather have? I mean, would you rather have a terrible Electron app that takes up a gigabyte of memory
and runs
like a web app? Or would you rather have the same version of the native app that's on iOS? I'd go with iOS every time, definitely.
Yeah,
it should be really interesting to see it's going to be good to see what improvements they've made since the initial version they've done and how they refer to it. Because that's the interesting thing with all this stuff. You know, is it going to be a different, like one of these something kit, or is it, because I don't think they'll be calling it Marzipan, which is what everyone else calls it.
No.
But it's going to be it'll be interesting to see.
UI kit on Mac will probably be the, it doesn't need a catchy name.
No,
it's not being marketed. I mean, it's being marketed to developers, but I can imagine it'll just be called UI kit for Mac.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I will, like, at the moment I don't build Mac apps. I've built a couple just for my own use of little things, but it is a lot more confusing for people that have never done it before. If you come from iOS and then you look at that, it's just like, what? Just little things, like the fact that the coordinate space is different. Like 0, 0 is not top left, it's the bottom left. And it's like, what? that is a bit of a head fuck to get round to start
yeah,
with.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's consistent on the watch, the iPhone, the iPad, and the TV. And then you come to the Mac and it's like completely different. And the things are named differently and everything's a bit older and you've got other things to deal with that you've not seen before. And it's much more delegate based. There's less blocks and all that kind of crap. So I think it'll definitely be better. I mean, I will definitely be using it. But it doesn't help for some of my apps. Because, like, for example, my music tracker app that keeps track of your music library to see what Apple Music has changed, that won't work because I doubt that they're going to port the Apple Music frameworks over, because the Mac doesn't have a concept of a media library because it can all be changed externally and altered and so on. So yeah. I don't think it's going to be a wholesale copying over of everything, because that isn't going to work. But it'd be interesting to see it, and I'm sure that I'll build a few apps that will port across. I think clients that want at the moment I'm building an app for a client who's on iPhone and iPad, and he'll definitely want a Mac app, so that's good for business.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I mean, I like the idea that there's more consistency between the OSs in terms of, like, the home app has its issues, but it's good that you can do home app control now on the Mac, and it's like with a voice recorder, or, you know, if they're going to introduce this I think they're combining Find My Friends and Find My iPhone into Find My Stuff or whatever it's going to be called, Find My yeah. Junk. And so that's going to be
have like a tile device as well that they're going
to. Yeah. Sell. And that stuff, interesting. It's always been frustrating when you've got like the latest Mac OS, you've got the latest iOS, and there's things that you can do on iOS that you can't on the Mac that are not through any technical reason. They're just, you know, the app isn't there. Like, you know, the home app isn't there. It's a bit like the Siri shortcut thing, you know, it doesn't work on the Mac, but
I've got a friend on iOS who every year complains that the iPad doesn't have a calculator app. Drives him mad that there's a fucking stocks app but no calculator.
Yeah. So
it's true. It's annoying. Really
cool. Yeah, I think it's gonna I think there's the argument that it could dumb down apps, but I think it will allow. So, I mean, apps like Ferrite, for example, which is a really nice editor, you know, on the iPad for doing podcasts and stuff, would be awesome if they can just take that and port it, and I can use it on my Mac. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting was slightly related to that, is there was talk about being able to finally connect an iPad to a Mac.
Yeah,
and use an external monitor, which sounds really cool and sort of pisses all over people that are trying to do that at the moment. But
yeah, like Duet, yeah. I think this one that yeah. I've used before. And there's one that's got like hardware that they sell at the Apple store, isn't there, that does it?
Yeah, I've got that, the little red thing.
I knew you would.
I can't remember what the hell it's called. Probably the one or two people that listen to this will be screaming now. Yeah, you plug it in and it uses Wi-Fi, so it's.
Yeah.
I don't think it's doing anything Wi-Fi wise. I think it's almost like a compression thing it's doing. I think it's something to do with the transmission that on the new iPads obviously works really well because of the speed, but I don't think it's some weird alternate Wi-Fi because.
No.
But I don't know how it works, but yeah, it's not bad. It's not perfect by any means. They claim it's like really, you know, almost like no lag and stuff. There is some lag and there is some quality issues with it, but it's pretty good. But I'm sure if Apple do something, it's going to be, you know, baked in at a sort of OS level.
Yeah.
So it'll be really, really slick. Yeah. And with the speed of the devices and everything, it should be really interesting. So yeah, I'm quite
I could see myself getting my 12-inch iPad out and just having that as a second screen.
Exactly, yeah.
Just because I'm not using it for anything else. So I could have that mounted and just have that maybe as like a little test area or something. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see it, but I'm not terribly excited for it. And what else is there in iOS that's supposed to be coming?
There's the thing that you're really looking forward to, dark mode. Oh, there's a new sleep mode, which I read about.
Do people care about dark mode so much? Why? I don't understand it.
I know. So anyway, there's a proper dark mode, system-wide dark mode, and a proper dark kit or theme kit or whatever you want to call it. Sleep mode was the one that I'd read this wrong when I read this was coming in, some new sleep mode. I thought what this was some... much better power management. So, you know, when the phone is, you know, when the phone is not being used, it was going to have, you know, much better standby time, basically.
No.
But it turns out sleep mode is really just a button that you click and then it just does a load of different things. So it dims the screen.
Yeah.
It goes do not disturb, you know, turns everything off. And that's pretty much all it does. So
it's going to be built into the bedtime tab in the clock app, which I never use because it's very confusing. And
I've tried using it
and I've never really got on with it. But also, like, I can see that being, if that gets like a really big redesign, that is a sure sign that the new Apple Watches will do bedtime sleep tracking.
Yes, I will
be interested in.
That would be cool.
Like I say, I'm already doing it just with a third-party app, which works incredibly well. I don't know how it works. Because there's nothing running on the watch. Like, I don't start anything on the watch to do it. It just does it based on the data it manages to pull out of health.
Oh, right.
I don't know how it works, but it's incredibly good. I guess it just reads, like, the heart rate and stuff, and it can... But it even gives me, like, little graphs showing me, like, where I've moved and stuff. It's weird. I guess maybe it detects, like, steps. Like, if you get, like, one step or something in the middle of the night, it's like, yep, you've rolled over. Like, I don't know how it works, but if they have that natively on the watch, then I guess a redesigned bedtime app would play into that, because you'll say, I'm going to bed now, and then it'll dim your phone and do all that other stuff. So that's interesting.
Yeah, because it could have, like, a low power... The watch could go into a sort of super low power mode where it's basically just tracking movement and things, but it's not having to... You know, it doesn't have to turn your screen on or anything, so it can switch into this much lower power mode overnight, and so you're not losing that much battery life. You know, it's not affecting it that much, which would be that would be interesting.
Because at the moment, I switch it into the cinema mode and I switch it into do not disturb mode before I go to sleep, so that my watch isn't like turning on as I thrash around with my night terrors.
Right. Okay. That's cool. iPad's supposed to be getting some UI tweaks, and they're talking about having. Stackable window, multi-window interfaces, either through tabs or stacks within apps, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah, multiple tabbed apps. That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Look forward to that.
I think one of the developers poking around found something about new classes to do with having secondary windows in your app. And
you know, that makes sense. If, like, I guess the idea when porting an iOS app to macOS is that in reality you're going to be porting the iPad for size, not the iPhone size. So if the iPad supports multiple tabbed windows, that makes sense because they translate to macOS.
Yeah.
It seems like a unification type of thing to me, but it sounds good.
Yeah, and if they do the thing of making the Safari default to the desktop sites for websites, that would be very cool, because I find that especially on a 12.9-inch iPad that's faster than a MacBook, it shouldn't be loading a mobile interface. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah,
and even then, if you do say request desktop site, it will, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'll never get it. Because website's doing something clever where it'll go, oh, you don't want the desktop site, you want a mobile site because you're on a mobile. It's like, oh my God.
I don't even want that on my phone. Like, the whole point of the iPhone was that it was a proper web browser, a desktop class browser. Why it has been ruined by web developers wanting to make these shitty websites with half the functionality missing is beyond me. There's no need for it. Like, let the browser scale it, which is why I don't build responsive websites, because I hate them. You don't need them.
Yeah, exactly. But they're the future. They are the future. Progressive web apps. Native apps are dead. quickly on macOS, I think there's some screen time improvements, and they're adding doofus shortcuts and things like that, which should be interesting. I think. What else was it? There was something else that was a big feature. Oh, but there's the multi-screen stuff and things like that. Hmm. But it sounds like otherwise it'll be fairly, you know, nice features, but fairly small updates for the Mac just to bring it in line.
Makes sense. I guess the biggest feature for them is getting a shit ton of new apps.
Exactly. Exactly. Do you think there'll be any? One question: do you think there'll be any hardware?
I think we'll see the Mac Pro. I don't think it'll be available, but I think they'll show it. Because
bigger trash can. It's just twice the size, so it's got more space for the thermal then.
Maybe. It's just a trash can, but out the top of it is the bottom of an Nvidia graphics card just poking out through the
exactly. They bring like a Dell PC on with an Apple logo on it or something.
I imagine we might see it.
What do you think it's going to be?
Well, we talked about this a lot a while ago, and I always maintained that it might be some modular thing.
Yeah.
And my theory was always that the Mac Mini and the Mac Pro would be the same thing, because you could build something small and cheap, or you could build something massive and crazy. So I still like that idea. It's probably not going to happen because they've done new Mac Minis, so I don't think that is going to be the way forward now. I think it will just be a horrendously expensive beast. I don't know what design it will take. I imagine it will be very different to the current Mac Pro. I still use the Mac Pro. I love the trash can design. I really like it. But
it's lovely.
Obviously, it doesn't work for heat with the single graphics card, which is the problem.
It's a lovely design. The stackable things are cool. I like the stackable concept. I do like that idea of, you know, you have your main. You should have your main unit, which is like the Mini, which is almost like it's got a basic processor and it does all the coordination of everything. And then you can plug in a GPU block to get faster GPU, maybe even plug in a CPU block that's got, you know, 4 Xeons in it or whatever, to suddenly offload the CPU to that in the same way that the way that external GPUs work. Maybe plugging in a memory block or there's all this different. That for me feels like the Apple way to do it. But I think if they did that, they'd get crucified because, you know, the GPU block would be £1,300 and would have last year's GPU. Do you know, like they're doing with that Blackmagic thing, you know, and everybody would be pissed because you couldn't open it up. So it does sound like it should just be a box that you can just do whatever you want with. But if it is a box that you can do whatever you want with, why didn't it come out a year ago? You know, why is it taking this long? Yeah. Which then makes me think they are going to try and do something clever, or clever as in it's going to piss a load of people off and be very, very expensive.
I have no doubt it is going to be very expensive.
Because the iMac is, the iMac Pro is what, starts at $5,000?
Yeah.
And if you want like the top spec, it's like 15 or 10 or 15 or something stupid.
Oh, and then add to this the rumors of the screen that's going to come. Like you can buy a screen to go with it. That screen is going to be $3,000 to start with. I mean, the screen is like 6K or something stupid, like in terms of resolution.
And typically with the pricing of these things, if you look at like the iMac pricing, you know, if you look at sort of the 20, what is it, the 21 inch, which they still sell, I think it's 21 inch 4K, isn't it? So the 21 inch, like the top end spec that you can do of that is going to be $1,000 or a couple of grand less than the base configuration of the 27. So there's always that sort of offset. So you go, oh no, do I spec this out fully or go for the base 27? And then obviously you can spec the base 27 up. And again, I haven't checked this, so I could be completely wrong, but I would suspect that the top level iMac, standard iMac 27 is probably a couple of grand or whatever below the bottom spec of the iMac Pro.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, and the top spec of the iMac Pro is whatever it is, 12, 16 grand or whatever, the base price of the Mac Pro could be horrendous.
Well, at the moment, the iMac Pro starts at $4,900.
Right.
Starting price. The Mac Pro starts at $3,000.
Oh, okay.
The current Mac Pro, which is...
But that's the old one. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
It's 2013 model. I mean, they did price drop it a little while ago, because that's when I bought mine, when they said that it would be at least a year until the new one would be ready. So that's when I bought the... I think I've got the 8-core one. What did I go for 6-core? I don't remember in the end. But that was, they are expensive machines. Yeah, I went for the 8-core. So the 8-core is $3,900 it starts at. So even the 8-core Mac Pro is $1,000 cheaper than the iMac Pro. But I mean, the iMac Pro has a lot newer hardware in it, and it has a 5K screen bolted onto it.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting to see where it goes price-wise. It'll be interesting to see what it does, how it's different, all the rest of it. Because obviously the iMac Pro is a weird device, because that is a crazy powerful device that they have with the display. And so the Mac Pro is going to have to be at least the same power-wise, at least, just without the screen. But it's probably going to be more powerful. And these are already ridiculous. So...
And what can you change on the iMac Pro? Is it just memory? Can you upgrade the memory, or is that fixed?
Let's have a look.
Because that is sold as a pro device, and pro people reckon that they should be able to do all these things with it. And I don't think you could do that much with the iMac Pro.
You can change the processor, and you can so this is the when you buy it.
Oh no, I mean when after you bought it, what can you do with it?
I think you can change the RAM still. That's it.
Okay, so for me,
technically,
it's like,
if you buy suction cups, you can change all of it. You just take the screen off.
True.
But you wouldn't.
So
do
it's
that.
So it's whether the Mac. So given they have an iMac Pro, you know, it has this name that's supposed to signify it's for professionals and all the stuff that comes with that, and we want to be able to do all these things. And you can't do that with the iMac Pro. You can just change the memory, really. But you know, maybe you could do other stuff under the scenes. I'm wondering what the Mac. That sort of leans me towards this thing that they're going to make the Mac Pro, this device that is so powerful, you know, way beyond where it should be in terms of power, that it's almost something that you don't need to upgrade everything. But then if, because of the nature of what it could be, and that GPUs are typically the things that people want to add more of, then well, surely that would allow the GPU to be upgraded. But then would it just be a module that you just plug in any GPU? Or are they going to give you slots? And if they give you slots for that, are they going to let you do the memory? That makes sense. If they let you do the memory, are they going to let you change the processor?
I don't think they're going to give you slots to change the GPU, because they only support certain GPUs.
Like, exactly.
The time of that has long gone.
So it feels like everything, for me, feels like we're swaying towards something that is a modular device, and that, you know, if you want to change,
but they're if you want to upgrade Apple modules,
exactly. And if you want to change the GPU to another one, you buy another one from Apple, you unplug it and plug it in, or you plug both in, and now you've got double the power.
Yeah.
That seems like an Apple thing to do. It uses all the Thunderbolt stuff they're doing. They've already got a precedent for having eGPU support in the operating system. And they've got that clever way, you know, that demo they did with the eGPU that was really cool, where they showed how the sort of built-in processor could do some stuff. Yeah, and they actually showed on the screen that the built-in processor was doing making a couple of buttons highlight, while the external ones were like doing 3D animations and bloody VR and stuff. But the internal one was still going, "Hey, I'm still doing this, guys. You know, I'm still managing this little bit of this. So I can I'm still good for this." So yeah, it should be interesting. I would go with that as well in terms of, I don't think they'll announce a MacBook Pro, a new design yet. And what do you think about the ARM Mac situation?
No, that's not going to be for a while.
Do you think it's going to happen then?
Oh yeah, it'll definitely happen because their processors are amazing, but they're not as powerful as the Intel ones yet. I mean, when you do a benchmark, they are, but that's because you're doing an intense burst. Whereas an Intel processor runs like that constantly, whereas mobile ones don't. So I think they've got a little bit further to go. I think that this whole bringing UIKit to the Mac is part of that transition, because if everything moves over to that, then you've got no reason why you can't just switch it to ARM.
Exactly.
Because it all runs on that hardware. But for now, I think it's I think it's a good two years away at least. I'd be very surprised if we saw one this year or next year.
Yeah. What the interesting thing about that whole possible transition would be if they allowed you to sort of, as a developer, install Mac OS ARM on an iPad Pro for testing.
Oh God, don't.
That would be crazy. Having an 12.9-inch iPad Pro with a terabyte of storage running Mac OS ARM would be insane. Just be crazy, wouldn't it? I mean,
oh no, it sounds horrible. I don't like it. It's all sorts of wrong.
Yeah.
Well, that's the only way you're going to get Xcode on an iPad. I tell you that much.
Yeah, true.
Whenever anyone says, "Oh, until you get Xcode on an iPad," it's like, why would you do that? Why would you want Xcode on an iPad, you sadist? What's wrong with you?
Exactly. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
No, I think we've done. That was a pretty good roundup of the last 8 months.
8 months. Yep. Cool.
Yep. Done.
catch up next time, then, I guess.
Yeah, which will hopefully be in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, cool.
Awesome. Good to talk to you as always, Jason.
And you. Speak to you soon.